Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we're talking with dry cleaning. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we review some new music from SZA and Margo Price.
Staying on my shirt, dude, my nerves on. Got curved, going back on my word. Damn, you're so thirsty. Still don't know my words. Still stress and perfection. Let you all in my mental. Got me looking too desperate. Damn.
That's a bit of a song called Shirt from the new SZA record, S-O-S, SZA, S-Z-A. SZA as in RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan,
yes,
right?
But not SZA.
But not, exactly. The second highly anticipated album in a row from this artist, Solana Rowe, born in St. Louis, raised in New Jersey, a high school gymnast.
Yeah.
Wasn't really sure about this music thing. She started writing some music, singing some songs, and lo and behold, gets a contract from Kendrick Lamar's label, Top Dog, in her early 20s. Made three EPs, collaborations with Rihanna, Beyonce, Nicki Minaj along the way. She was already the talk of the town. You know, I mean, you know, this is the next great R&B
this
star,
is an important
right?
voice.
And she lived up to all that hype with Control, deeply personal record, almost diaristic, you know, the way she was approaching a lot of the songs, the whole idea of sex and love and longing, African-American womanhood. It's all in that record. More than 100 songs written for that record
yeah.
that she winnowed down. And she had a hard time letting it go. It ended up selling 3 million copies. Huge success commercially. She's been busy in that time since. She dropped 16 singles in that time.
Yeah,
and collaborations, you know, including that Oscar-nominated Black Panther track, All the Stars. 2021, Doja Cat song, Kiss Me More, that she was on. Huge hit single. She did an interview with The Trib in 2017 in which she said she didn't want to spend another 4 years working on her next album. And she didn't. She
spent five. Yeah.
You know, so, and here it is. It's SZA with a new record out, which is much, much anticipated, SOS, and a track from it called Nobody Gets Me on Sound Opinions.
It's too late, I don't want to lose. What's left of you?
That is Nobody Gets Me from SZA, her second album in a career that has garnered many accolades. You know, shout out to producer Alex Claiborne. We spent a couple of weeks, most of two shows, Greg, wrapping up 2022. We never got to talk about this SZA record. I'm glad we're catching up with it now in the few sleepy days of 23 before things get busy again. Alex said it was one of her favorite albums of the year. I agree. You know, I mean, look at the people working with her. From old school R&B giant Babyface to Rodney Jerkins to Lizzo and Bjork, right? Phoebe Bridgers. Mm-hmm. Phoebe is everywhere these days. That list alone shows the breadth of SZA's musical interests. She does not want to be called just R&B. There is as much indie rock, electronica, folk music, in her mix as any other single ingredient. She's a singer, not as good a singer as a rapper. She's a great rapper, but most of all, she's a personality. She says that this record was inspired by her being ticked off. It's about heartbreak. It's about being lost. It's about being ticked off. But it is not a downer. It is not wallowing in anything. She gets angry. She fantasizes killing an ex in Kill Bill. I might kill my ex. I still love him though. Rather be in jail than alone. And she makes some profound statements in Gone Girl. She's warning a partner not to get too clingy. I need your touch, not your scrutiny.
I need your touch, not your scrutiny. Squeezing too tight, boy, you're losing me. Boy, you're losing. Gone, gone girl, gone girl.
At another point, she says, I don't want to be your girlfriend. I want to be your person, right? Which I think is a really powerful... I mean, girlfriend... is such an antiquated term, right? We all have friends. Some are male, some are female, some are non-binary. You know, girlfriend connotes possessiveness, I think, in 2023. And SZA doesn't want to be owned by anybody.
Yeah. No, absolutely. She's a very serious artist. You know, and talking with her back in 2017, it was very obvious how much she invests in writing these songs. The craft of songwriting is really, really important to her. And she's such a perfectionist. I mean, for this record, again, over hundreds of songs written for it, 23 make the cut. She probably could have plied it down a little bit more.
Yeah, but yeah. 23 is a long album.
Just about every one of these songs defies a conventional pop song structure. At the same time, she's evidencing, that there's that country-ish song, F2F in there. There's a babyface ballad. There's a Mazzy Star vibe on that song, Nobody Gets Me. The mixtape hip-hop vibe on Smoking on My X-Pack, you know. These are the variety of music that she brings into this is really intriguing. And also the way she approaches it. I love the fact that there was a level of understatement and dirtiness to those beats. There wasn't a big booming beat. There's not big, obvious refrains either. She's not going for the home run. She's going for the more of this smoky vibe. And I disagree with you. I think her singing voice is incredibly good.
Yeah.
Very almost jazzy, more so than traditional R&B, or contemporary pop.
It doesn't put me off. I just don't think of her as a great, great vocalist, like Margot Price.
I would compare it to Rihanna's 2016 album, Anti. This reminds me a lot of that approach where everybody's going, like, what's Rihanna up to? There's no obvious hooks on this one. This is kind of a weird, out there kind of record. But Rihanna, when she gets kind of dirty and not dirty in any kind of explicit way, but more in the sound.
Gritty, let's say.
Grit is right. This is what SZA, that level of R&B is where she's at right now. And I just think it's incredible. She also is great at saying the quiet part out loud. You mentioned that song, Kill Bill.
Yeah.
A lot of people think these in their relationship. She's saying it out loud. Yes, there is anger there, but it's also her courage in expressing her true feelings about these relationships. So, to me... another great record. It's probably going to get showered with mainstream Grammys, et cetera. But I just think from a critical standpoint, I think she's one of the great artists of recent times.
Yeah, and we're due for another one in like 2028.
Yeah. Used to be a lover.
That is a little bit of the song Been to the Mountain, the opening track on Strays, the fourth album from Margot Price. a native of small town Aledo, Illinois, that's out on the western border. She initially made a mark in the music world as part of the duo that formed Buffalo Clover, her and her husband, bassist Jeremy Ivey. Couple of indie albums, and then she went solo, still working with hubby Jeremy. Midwest Farmer's Daughter, March 2016, big splash. It really marked Margot as one of this current class of kind of underground-oriented country singer-songwriters. Mm-hmm. Feminist, strong personality. That came through, I think, abundantly late last year when we chatted with Margot about her autobiography, Maybe We'll Make It. She indicated in that chat for Strays, the new album, that they retired her and Jeremy to a Airbnb in Charleston, South Carolina, bringing nothing but notebooks, guitars, and a pile of psychedelic mushrooms. Oh, yeah, there were a couple of records, too. She was listening to a lot of Tom Petty. Got some guests on this record. Mike Campbell, former Petty sideman. Sharon Van Etten, great singer-songwriter as well. What is Margot giving us on album number 4? Let's play a track and we'll come back with our reviews. This is a song that features Sharon Van Etten, Radio, by Margot Price on Sound Opinions.
Why do I feel so sick and tired? Sick and tired every day. People try to push me around. Run my name straight in the ground. I can hear them tune them out. And I turn the way down low. The only thing I have on is the radio.
That is a track called Radio from the fourth Margot Price album, Strays. Margot Price, you know, you mentioned that first album, Midwest Farmer's Daughter, and it sort of, I think people tend to think first impressions, that's what you are. You know, so she's a country singer, right? Everybody made that deduction. And of course she's not. I mean, and she subsequently made a bunch of albums that have really expanded her reach. I remember seeing her in concert right after that album came out. I go, wow. You know, she's drawing on Ike and Tina Turner's Soul from the 60s. Mm-hmm. She was, referencing Neil Young. She was referencing acid rock.
You can hear those mushrooms in the guitar work on this album, I'll tell you that.
For sure. This is the album, you know, as soon as Bend to the Mountain kicks in with that organ sort of drifting in, you know you're getting pulled into a different world than the one she's been exploring, at least sonically, in her studio records so far. You know, in terms of late bloomers, there's something to be said for sort of being way under the radar for 10 plus years like she was, and sort of developing her different musical tastes along the way. She's clearly able to do so much as an artist interested in all these different genres, and that just gives her songwriting so much more reach as well. I hate to say that this is the best album she's made, but I have to say I'm more drawn to this record than any she's made so far, and none of them have disappointed me at all.
No, I've loved them all, yeah.
This is really a pretty impressive piece of work, and I think the range that she's showing here, you know, there's definitely that acid rock influence, there's no doubt about that, but also just the way her voice operates within that. There's defiance here. I've been to the mountain and back. Yep. Go on, take your best shot.
Yeah.
You know, she's sort of reflecting back on the memoir, Maybe We'll Make It, where she's talking about, you know, going through these travails and wondering if she's going to get out the other side. And there's that toughness there, but there's also a wistfulness in some of these songs. You know, a song like Time Machine, where she's reflecting back on her beginnings and, you know, what she learned there and the struggle from that point to where she is now.
She's not lost touch with the working class roots. I've been a waitress. I'm a consumer.
Not at all. Then you think about a song like Lydia, which I think is just one of the peak moments in her career from a storytelling perspective.
I think of a nursery rhyme or maybe something your mama used to tell you when you couldn't sleep. Jill fell down when the bow breaks, or the cradle will fall down the corner.
A lot of these songs are more personal,
introspective.
This seems to be about a person, but in a lot of ways, Lydia's story could be her own story.
Or any woman's
details.
Today.
Absolutely.
The reason I chose radio to bump in, what I think Margot Price retains from the great country pop movement of the 60s, Dolly Parton, you know, Emmylou Harris, Tammy Wynette to some degree, is that masterful double entendre. So radio is a song about Margot, who is a mom, working hard to be a good mom, a good wife, and an artist, you know, feeling alone and isolated during the pandemic and playing the radio, right, for a little bit of escape.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a sexiness there. You know, she's singing, you know, I've got nothing on but the radio. And so there are always several levels that she's working on. Her storytelling is excellent, as you said. Her memoir, personal songs are incredible. The voice is an incredible instrument. And then we have more psychedelic guitar than we've ever had on a Margot record. And I'm all in favor of that. What a wonderful record Strays is.
So that's what we thought of the new music from SZA and Margot Price. And now we want to hear from you, our listeners. Let us know what you think in our Patreon community. Or leave us a voice message on our website at soundopinions.org so we can play it on the show. Coming up, our conversation with Florence and Nick of Dry Cleaning. That's coming up on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know when you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, Lemonade Shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. It was 2019 when Dry Cleaning released its debut single, The Magic of Meghan, an ode to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's recent engagement.
I fell in love with Meghan. So incredibly pretty.
It might also be the most straightforward lyric of any song from the South London Quartet. A handful of EPs developed a more abstract lyrical style and caught the attention of the British music industry and then the world. Before the end of 2020, the group was signed to the 4AD label, prestigious British indie. PJ Harvey's longtime producer John Parrish was in the studio with them, and we got their debut full length.
That is right, Jim. That first album released in 2021, titled New Long Leg, it certainly got our attention. It landed on both of our top five albums of that year. And we both still listen to it to this day.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful record, really holds up well. But I don't think either one of us were expecting the follow-up. You know, what are they going to do with that?
It was so unique.
Where do they go from there, right?
So unique. Could they possibly do it again?
Exactly. And lo and behold, Stumpwork, the new album that came out in 2022, is even better than that first album. They really expanded their sound.
My album of the year.
We had a chance to speak with drummer Nick Buxton and vocalist Florence Shaw to try to find out how their musical alchemy works.
Welcome to Sound Opinions.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us and for the kind words, and back at you. I love your podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. It's great to have you both on. Let's start at the beginning. Nick, you and your buddies, Tom and Lewis, are essentially jamming, right? We're going to put together a band, right? But you're missing the dulcet vocalist.
Very much so, yeah. It was very non-vocal.
What was the goal of what, you know, you were trying to do? Because, no offense, Florence, but it seems like everybody focuses on you, right? You're up front. The music is extraordinary. And it's a real marriage between the band and vocalist. Was it sounding that way, Nick, at the beginning?
Yeah, the first rehearsal that Flo came to, I think we all knew right away. It felt great. It sounded great. We were really unambitious. You know, we weren't looking to change the world or anything. Still not. But we were just like, we're all good friends. We're looking to have just a good time, really, and enjoy making music together. And that's always kind of been the ambition with any project I've ever had. I can make a lot of music on my own, but I don't really choose to much of the time because I enjoy collaborating. And I think the aim of the band was really just to have a good time. It was more of like a social thing rather than a musical thing. At that point, we would just get together on Sundays. We would go over to Lewis's mum's house and she'd cook food for us. Those were amazing times. And it really took me back to being like 16 and being in bands and going over to your friends' houses and like making a racket in the garage. I would say we spent more time in the beginning playing computer games and eating than we did making music, for sure. Like 100%, yeah.
Nick, you guys were, at least some of you had backgrounds in hardcore, right?
For sure,
hardcore,
yeah.
Punk,
like,
and
me, Lewis and Tom all played in sort of like heavier bands in the past. I've played drums and guitar in like kind of, you know, kind of post-hardcore and like metal bands. But, you know, like tastes move on and like I haven't really played in a band like that for a long time. Maybe Tom more recently. But yeah, that was definitely, we've all kind of been there with bands like that for sure and done a lot of shows in those kind of scenes.
All right, so Flo, you were friends with all these folks.
Yeah.
But prior to getting sucked into standing in front of the microphone, you're primarily a visual artist and a university lecturer, is that right?
Yeah. I was
teaching?
I was teaching. Amongst other jobs, I was living that kind of lifestyle where ends never totally meet. So I was doing like loads of different kinds of work. Yeah, I was doing
that's
some
the definition
kind of
being a teacher.
Yeah, I was doing some kind of like office work on the side, and then also kind of like workshops with children, like arts workshops at a few different places, and then also teaching drawing to like kind of like 18, 19 year olds mostly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, by no means are you a conventional vocalist. And I love this story. It might not be true. You were reluctant. What do you mean you want me to sing? They said, go listen to Grace Jones's Private Life and Little Fluffy Clouds by the Orb. Neither of which have conventional vocals. And it was like, look, those are great tracks, right? You can do this.
Yeah, that is exactly what happened. It was a long process. I talked to Tom about it first. We were in a pub. We would always update each other on what we were doing and making at the time, and whether it was comics or being in a band or whatever. And he was talking about the band that he was doing with Nick and Lewis, which I already knew about because they were my friends. And I was like, oh, that's nice that they're getting together and doing a band.
How cute.
Cool. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
So funny.
And he had some on his phone. I think he had like recordings on his phone, which were basically instrumentals of quite a few of the things on the first EP on Sweet Princess. So I was listening to those. I was like, oh, these are nice. Great. Like, good for you. I don't know why that's making me laugh.
No, it's funny.
It's a bit of a wobble moment, isn't it? It's like, oh gosh. And then it was either right there or later that he said, oh, like, have you ever thought about being in a band? Like what about kind of doing some vocals? Which kind of like struck terror into my heart possibly partly because when he asked, I had a feeling I would end up doing it. Because, you know, yeah. if you just say no way, then it's fine. Right. And you just go home and you don't have to worry about it and it's not scary. But when he asked, I just had a feeling that either he would convince me to do it, mm-hmm. or that I would be like too curious and would go along anyway, which is far scarier than just saying no and going home. So he asked me, and then I was immediately quite afraid. And I was sort of saying, well, not really. My dad is a musician, not as his profession, but he used to play in a lot of bands when I was younger. He plays the guitar really well, and he drums also, and he sings and plays a harmonica.
He's
so
a
like,
cool guy.
Yeah. So like when we were kids, he would sort of like turn us into a band. We'd like do backing vocals for him or whatever. And like just, you know, like sort of like playing, you know. He would like teach me little keyboard parts or whatever. But it was strictly for fun, you know. It was never something that I had ambitions to pursue.
Well, I'm just fascinated with what that first rehearsal might have been like. They talk you into this, and some combination of they're your friends, and also you seem like, you know, in Chicago we have such a huge improv scene, right? And the secret to being an improv comedian is you just say yes and. Thrown any challenge, you say yes and, right? You seem like a yes and person that winds up fronting dry cleaning. Sort of this stream of consciousness that may be meaningless, but there's also meaning in there, right? You know, was that there from, you know, the first song you sang?
Yeah, it felt like a really accessible way to come up with words. It really wasn't like the sort of culmination of a long thought process. It was really just like what I felt like I could manage alongside the nerves, you know? So it was kind of like, well, I know I can write in little chunks, like I do that already. I was already doing that sort of in my phone, in like the notes in my phone. I was always, just writing down little things I saw or thought about or heard that I thought were interesting or funny or sounded funny. I would just write them down. And so I had all of that already. And so I just thought, oh, well, I'll kind of just like mash that together and see what happens. Not thinking that that would be the end result, you know. I just thought, well, this is a stepping stone to doing something in collaboration with these musicians, mainly because I was so nervous. It's funny. It's like I think about it now and really, like, probably things that were going on in, like, my personal life or even just the nerves themselves were really at the forefront. What I was actually doing was totally a footnote in that situation. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we weren't really it was more just doing a band at all rather than what we were actually doing.
Yeah.
We got engaged on the day that I moved out. It's okay. She's a smasher, perfectly suited to the role.
It's still like that now, to be honest with you. Like, you don't really realise what you've made until after you've done it. You know, and your kind of existence in the process is, like, largely subjective. Maybe a year after it's done, you can kind of look back at it and go like, oh, yeah, I mean, I understand.
Well, you know, Eno had been a proponent of the words don't have to mean anything. We can go to them for the sound. And he was taking a lot of that from the surrealist Dadaist poets. You go ball, you know, intentionally, you know, cut and paste, and also just, you know, taking words literally like out of one of those bingo drums.
Yeah.
And I think part of the fun for fans of dry cleaning is, when is Flo singing about something? Oh, this is the song about the tortoise. And when is this just words from the ether?
Yeah.
Have you gone back, you know, being a lecturer, a university person, you know, have you gone back and looked at this word, this business of spontaneous word generation?
You know, I haven't, but I've subsequently heard a lot about it. You know, it's I'm even though I've got that sort of tag of like university lecturer, what I taught was always very practical. It was always like drawing skills, you know, and talking about drawing. So I'm actually not a super intellectual person. So that kind of side of things, like cut up technique and Dada and all that, is something that I've learned more about since I started kind of like doing the band and like performing and writing in this kind of way. It's something that's kind of come onto my radar more since then. But the thing I always heard about Dada that I really liked was it sort of came about during a time where Europe was just, there were lots and lots of different kind of fascist governments kind of taking control and that kind of thing. The movement was sort of a statement to say that people had their own minds and that it was kind of...
World War One hung over everything they did.
Yeah, so it was like, it was sort of like pushing back against that kind of groupthink, that very sort of black and white kind of fascist view and kind of protesting by saying, you know, like only one person could have come up with this kind of mad and nonsense poem.
Yeah.
You know? So it's almost like proof that individual minds are out there and we're not all just like sheep or whatever. And I always thought that that was a really powerful thought, you know, that you could write something that was absurd or funny or kind of nonsensical, but it actually have quite a serious sort of implication.
There's inherent humor in that Dada approach, the cut-up thing. And I think that's what got to us, Flo, is that, you know, I remember, I think the first we heard of the band was I think it was a single scratch art lanyard.
I think of myself as a hardy banana with that waxy surface and small, delicate flowers. A woman in aviators firing a bazooka.
And we're listening to those vocals, and it's very dry, deadpan, and all of a sudden I'm laughing out loud. And I played my wife this song, and I go, I think of myself as a hardy banana. A woman in aviators firing a bazooka. I mean, that string of words right there. And, you know, it was out of thin air. And all of a sudden, I'm like, we're rolling on the floor laughing out loud. And my wife's reaction went, who is this? You don't want to hear more of this stuff. And so the humor is a really big part of it, I think, the appeal. But it's so understated that you almost wouldn't know that it's there unless you're kind of paying attention, and then it just sort of,
well, something like Disco Pickle just jumps out at you, right. And you're like, what?
So were you cracking up when you were listening to what Flo was coming up with, or what was your response to it?
Sometimes the lyrics may be on different songs or vice versa, and things change a lot whilst we're kind of figuring out how to do it. And I think sometimes, not always, but like, you know, we rehearse a lot in these scuzzy little rehearsal rooms where you can't always hear a nuanced, quiet spoken vocal over a loud rock band. But it's really interesting what you're talking about. I think humor is like a huge part of what we do. I think people connect with it massively in that way. And I think humor is always like such a useful tool in the way that Dada was, like in the way that you can rail against the things that you find oppressive and disgraceful.
Were you surprised at the reaction that the first album got? New Long Leg was a hit. I mean, it was...
Imagine that!
It wasn't just a, you know, an arty side project. It was a charting album.
Mm.
Did that surprise you both?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, massively. Oh, it's crazy, right?
You don't want to sort of do yourself down by being like, I was shocked that it did well.
Because obviously you're proud of it.
That sounds really kind of self-deprecating, doesn't it? But, like, I think we were. I think we've always been aware that, like, you know, we're not oblivious to the fact that, like, we're a bit of an odd band, you know? I think that's fair to say, right? I don't think that's too strong. We never thought that success would just come rolling in automatically at all. Like, we just did not. No, we were kind of readying ourselves for it to be more of a slog, probably.
Probably.
It's hard to say, but yeah, we did not expect it to go to number four in the charts.
There's a certain amount of kind of confidence that you can definitely take from people being interested in your band, you know, working with a manager, like having a record label want to work with you and a publishing company and all this kind of stuff.
You know, John Parrish, no slouch.
Absolutely,
willing to produce,
I mean,
you guys.
Yeah, I can't believe that should have been the first name on my lips, right? And that, it certainly made me feel confident in what we were doing. The success of something like New Long Leg is, it's incredible. But I don't know. I can't say I really thought about it too much when, you know, when it was first coming out, and you're just kind of glad that it's out there.
Yeah.
You know, because you've been listening to it for a year.
Don't cry, just drive.
When we return, we'll talk with Dry Cleaning about how their surprise success has affected their creativity. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Doing.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. We're talking with Florence Shaw and Nick Buxton of Dry Cleaning.
All right, so Flo, I have a question for you. The persona on stage, the persona on record is so powerful and wise and funny and witty. I just picture Emma
Peel. Wouldn't it
Peel
be nice to be
with
that
like
person?
A happy air, you know, you just run us right through with this sword. And yet, Flo keeps getting asked what it's like to be a woman in a band. That's like, oh, God almighty, what the worst question ever, you know.
It's hard like to answer mean, when you are
tell
one.
Us both. Yeah, right. But you do have this persona. So if people are running into you when you're buying oranges at the grocery store, do they expect the Florence of Dry Cleaning? Do you feel you have to live up to that?
It's a good question. I think if anything, it just helps me because I'm not necessarily consistent. Sometimes I find socializing really hard and sometimes I find it easy and enjoyable. And I never quite know how I'm going to feel. So in a way, having a persona that is perhaps a little removed can be helpful because people don't necessarily expect me to be a barrel of laughs.
Or like they might be a little intimidated.
Well, they don't necessarily expect me to be super, super friendly. Mm. And if I can manage to be, then that's a bonus.
Gotcha.
And I feel like, but I obviously didn't think about that at all when we did that first rehearsal in the garage. Like that, I was just kind of like, who's the kind of person I imagine to be really confident, or who's the kind of person I'd like to be like, or like, and I think of it more than being sort of an ice queen or something like that. I think of it more as like just a strong person who's quite immovable. Mm. I find that really attractive, that sort of idea. And I'd love to be like that, but I'm not like that all the time.
I don't think anybody could be, but it's a goal to aspire to.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask about the fact that you were, you know, you're a teacher. You're standing in front of a classroom, right, of students, right, talking to them.
Yeah.
Did that make it easier to be a performer in a band?
It's definitely true. It did wind up being a bit of a stepping stone. I can get into a mindset where I can stand in front of people and speak, and I feel basically calm. Not before or after, that's a nightmare. But during, I have like, I'm able to just be calm, and I don't know why that is, but it's a thing. I've always had that, and I've found a good use for it.
Constructive. Yeah. All right, so, and Nick, I think what you were saying earlier was fascinating. I think people who haven't been in bands don't understand how valuable, when you can have finally get to a rehearsal space that has like heating or air conditioning and a powerful enough PA to hear the vocals and hear each other, right? So you're there, and now it's time for album number two. Was there pressure on top of the fact that now we can all hear ourselves? It's like, what do we do now?
Not really. I mean, we, if it's sort of okay to say so, we were sort of beneficiaries of the pandemic in the sense that we wrote half of Stunt Work before New Long Leg had been released. So we finished recording it, and you get it mastered and whatnot, and then we couldn't play shows. We had press to do and things like that. So we'd get to writing, and then once all the press was done, we were actually extremely focused on writing new material because there wasn't even really much to do at home. There was a lot of stuff going on in that period, both, you know, on a global sense, but also in a personal sense. Like, we had some very difficult things going on in our personal lives. And I think the rehearsals and the writing was kind of like an escape. You know, it was something else to do, something else to think about. There is some element of pressure around it, but I don't really indulge in a lot of the press or anything like that. I'm just sort of too fragile to really go delving for those kind of things.
Me too. Yeah. I'm the same.
Really?
I don't read anything.
Yeah, try to avoid most of it.
With a delicate flower.
I mean, you would know. You would know if it had been badly received, you would know, regardless of what you read, you know, like, you just know. So it's a strange mix of like confidence and pressure, but I'd say mainly, you know, I'd say we felt really emboldened to try new things and to just, you know, get songs written without really thinking too much about it.
What impresses me is that the band is able to do a wide variety of things in a very subtle way. Hmm. How does it come together? Do you feel like there's a song in the record that sort of represents to you where we are in late 2022 versus where we were when New Long Leg came out?
Maybe, I mean, I always want to say Anna, because Anna Calls from the Arctic. It's the first song on the record, and it's by far the most sort of like unusual sounding. It doesn't sound like the rest of the songs, really. It has synths on it, which is not really something we've done before. Not anything
like
beyond
the
sort of, exactly,
yeah, yeah.
Like not as a major part of the song.
Still making on the train, Anna Calls from the Arctic. See the scientists, or people who are mining, or dog sledge people. See the scientists, or people who are mining, or dog sledge people.
And it came from a bass and clarinet and synth jam that you did with Lewis. I think me and Tom were both ill, right? Or something like that. So when we had a rehearsal booked, and they were like, well, we're still going to do it. Nick started playing a clarinet. Like,
wow.
And it, yeah. And like this kind of, we have a collection of all our demos, and we had about 50 of them at one point. And this little one that's called Peanuts was just in there for ages and ages, this little bass and clarinet and synth jam that basically sounds a lot like how Anna Calls from the Arctic sounds. We just kind of expanded it and made it a bit more kind of romantic, I guess, and a bit more epic.
Yeah, lushed it out.
Yeah. It was almost quite an unusual choice because at the very last minute, sort of almost before we went to record, we turned that little kind of recording into a song, which is
structure.
It's
yeah.
definitely like now it's like one of my favourites. I feel like it has a really unique atmosphere, and we sort of did it just quite quickly, right at the last minute, and that felt very just felt quite experimental, quite playful, and just a bit sort of like risky and weird. It's got a weird choice to make. Mm. And I guess I just hope that we make more weird choices like that.
Yeah.
So Flo, do you put the words over the top of it when you hear what they're doing, or is the band working off lyrics that you give them? How does the dynamic work between the vocals mixing with the so well with the music?
It's totally give and take, so nothing comes first. It all comes at the same time. So when we're rehearsing, we're all improvising and playing, and I'm speaking and vocalizing at the same time. So with all my writing there, and I'm kind of putting it together and making it up as we go, in the same way that Lewis is putting together and making up his bass parts and Nick's doing the same on the drums and Tom's doing the same on the guitar. And we'll do that until we feel our way towards a song, you know. We make a lot of recordings on our phones of like just little demo versions of songs, and we'll take them away and listen to them, decide which bits to keep, which bits to get rid of. So it's like trial and error, really. But yeah, it's never like lyrics first, music second. I mean, it was that in the very beginning for Sweet Princess, but because I hadn't even joined yet. But then ever since then, it's all been just written at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool.
I'm looking forward, Greg, to a decade from now, after 6 or 8 albums from dry cleaning, when the box set comes out and there's like 6 CDs outtakes of these demos. And, the, you know, Nick, does Flo ever let the band look at the phone that has all these phrases that she's picked up from the ether?
The stuff you've written down. Well, you're not very secretive about it. You just, it's not really on the phone. You tend to collect the stuff.
Starts on the phone.
And then you'll put it on paper and the paper will just be everywhere.
And then I print it out.
Yeah.
See, that's what, I would love to see that.
Well, the way they're describing, what you're describing, we talked to Pino Palladino, who was, at the Soul Aquarians working with D'Angelo. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Voodoo record, but that was like made in a very way, the way you're describing. It's like, jam band sounds like a very bad thing to call dry cleaning, but because you're not that. But it's sort of creating that sort of atmosphere where everybody's sort of working together in real time, as opposed to, I recorded my bass part, now here's the drums, now here's the guitar part, and then the vocals are going to go at the end. And it sort of comes together like a digital creation, but you're doing it in real time.
We've discovered recently that it leads to some very complicated song structures that are then, when you try to unravel it and learn and like sort of learn it again later, it's like a bloody nightmare.
We gotta play this on stage.
Exactly.
We were like all trying to count our different parts Anna Calls from the Arctic yesterday, and it's like, I've definitely got the simplest job by far. But everyone else is like counting in sixes and sevens and rounds of eight, and someone was talking about rounds of 11 or something, like 11, they restart their part after 11 bars.
I think that was wrong as well.
we got very
became Genesis.
It does get confusing. But yeah, it's like a, I guess we are a jam band in that sense. I don't want to rule out us making music any other way at any stage. Like, I think it might be really interesting for us at some point to make a record in a completely different way. We've talked about before, maybe, you can kind of keep the essence of like being a jam band and go into the studio without any songs, and just start completely from scratch. Like, we're all really interested in like taking a risk like that. It might completely fail, but that's what's kind of exciting about it.
Well, people forget, there's jam bands like Matthews or something, Fish, and then there's like Can.
Hell yeah, right?
Right. Well, we could just talk to dry cleaning all day, Mr. Cott, but we have to let you guys go. I never even got to ask Nick about what it's like to be a boy in a band.
Let me tell you, no idea.
Nobody ever talks about that.
That's right.
We've been talking to Florence Shaw and Nick Buxton of Dry Cleaning. I am so excited about the new album. Thank you for making us smile.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. It's been really nice talking to you.
Yeah.
New Zealand, France, Switzerland, Northampton, Exeter, Egypt. It won't do to cry about it.
That wraps up our conversation with Dry Cleaning, and what a pleasure it was. Now we want to hear from you. What Dadaist art is your favorite? Leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, or start a conversation in our Patreon community or in our Facebook group.
That is a little bit of Shapes of Things by the Yardbirds with Jeff Beck on guitar. An amazing guitarist. Died at the age of 78 on January 10th. Nobody saw that one coming.
No.
You know, talk about a guy, you know, you talk about the decadence of 60s rock stars. Mm. Jeff Beck was a clean living dude, you know?
Yeah.
Auto mechanic. He loved his cars. He lived a clean life. He was in great form. Right up to the very end, he was touring and recording regularly over the course of a 50-year career.
Mm-hmm.
So this was quite a stunning piece of news.
Well, and despite the amount of psychedelic influence in those really great Yardbird singles, like the one we bumped in with, not known as a druggie, and really kind of a grounded fellow, but what a perfect mixture of psychedelic and blues.
Absolutely. You know, the Yardbirds, he was only in the Yardbirds for a couple of years. He replaced Clapton, famously replaced Eric Clapton, who thought the Yardbirds weren't bluesy enough for him, so he went on to the Blues Breakers. Beck took the Yardbirds from being kind of a purist blues rock band into that psychedelic realm, as you mentioned, noise, avant-garde music. He was bringing all that to the guitar. You know, I would say that people like Bo Diddley, Paul Burleson, Pat Hare, these 50s greats, reinvented the guitar in terms of incorporating noise and dissonance and feedback into what they were doing. But Beck took it to a completely different level. Years before Hendrix got on the scene, you know, this whole idea of sculpting noise, that using a sort of a methodology about how to play that feedback and that noise and sculpting it into almost compositionally into something that resembled a song. Beck did that better than anybody and before anybody, really. And it started out with the Yardbirds. He left the Yardbirds after only a couple of years. Jimmy Page came in famously and took over that job. Jimmy Page was paying attention to what Beck was doing, you know, and formulating Led Zeppelin at that point. When you think about Beck's Bolero, the song that Beck announced his solo career with, that included Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones, both of the future Led Zeppelin, and Keith Moon of The Who on drums.
So that's a nice backing crew.
That man had the respect of everybody in the English rock scene.
Well, and it's a sad irony that he never achieved the superstardom of The Who or Led Zeppelin.
Well, you know, two things. He wasn't a singer, and he wasn't a songwriter, really. You know, he was more of an interpreter, but that what he did with that guitar was amazing. The first two Jeff Beck Group records with Rod Stewart, a young unknown Rod Stewart on vocals and a young unknown Ronnie Wood on bass, were amazing records. Basically, that Truth record that the Jeff Beck Group did in 1968, that's the template for Led Zeppelin right there. And that was a year ahead of Zeppelin. And then he went on to a solo career, which included a groundbreaking fusion record produced by George Martin called Blow by Blow in 1975. And some people lose the plot there. You know, they go, oh, it's too jazz fusion-y for me. But I think that's an incredibly inventive record. And if you listen to the entire thing, there's a lot of soul in it. And I think that's what Beck brought to all his playing, was he was an incredibly soulful musician. He wasn't really a singer, so he played the guitar like the human voice. And he was able to create sounds on the guitar.
You can hear that in something like Heart Full of Soul.
Yeah.
He's echoing the vocal melody.
Yeah, it's truly astonishing. And I heard Alice Cooper said something really beautiful about him. He said, Clapton was a great blues guitarist. Page was a great rock guitarist. Jeff Beck was a great guitarist.
Mm.
There was no genre that could really contain what he was doing. And the one thing that I think separates Beck from the pack, from a lot of his 60s peers, is that he kept growing and innovating all through the decades. He never really stopped reinventing himself and expanding his range. In tribute to Jeff, let's play a little bit of Beck's Bolero, which really got his solo career going. That track that I'd mentioned with Page, John Paul Jones, and Keith Moon accompanying him. Here is the late, great Jeff Beck on Beck's Bolero on Sound Opinions.
Bex Bolero in tribute to the late guitarist dead at the age of 78. Mr. Cott, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we have songs about photography. Okay, we're going to go dig deep into this particular area of music making.
And we're going to chat with one of our favorite photographers.
Absolutely. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast wherever you can get your podcast.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Lauren Holt, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.